from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Who will be the next big clothing brand that is made in the Bay Area? In this hour, we'll hear about some of the entrepreneurs producing apparel right here, including t-shirts, jeans, and jewelry. If you are looking for bargain basement shopping, look elsewhere. That's more the realm of Levi's or Gap, two San Francisco companies who cut costs by manufacturing their clothes overseas. But these upstart businesses have good reasons for staying local, reasons that might just convince you to buy what they have to sell. Made in the Bay Area, next on Forum. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Michael Krasny. Think of a product that is made here in the Bay Area. You might first think of food and drink, things like Anchor Steam beer, Blue Bottle coffee, Boudin bread, or It's It ice cream. If you thought of Levi's jeans, think again. Those are not made here. But there are entrepreneurs selling apparel that was designed and manufactured from the Bay Area. It can be more expensive, but these designers argue it is worth paying more to get something truly special. In this hour of Forum, we'll meet some of these clothiers and learn about efforts to help their businesses thrive. Joining me here in studio for the hour is Ulrich Conrad Simpson, better known as Ubi, a clothing designer who founded Ubi End Denim. Ubi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Fifth Gobadian is the co-founder and CEO of Road 22, a clothing line that employs formerly incarcerated women. Fifth, glad to have you here.
Good morning.
Bayard Winthrop is the founder of American Giant, the clothing line that gained fame for what some describe as the best hoodie in the world. Bayard, welcome to Forum.
Thanks for having me.
And Kate Sofis is the executive director of SF Made, a nonprofit focused on growing San Francisco's manufacturing sector. Kate, good morning.
Good morning.
Kate, I want to start with you. Before we talk to these entrepreneurs, let me start with you. Paint us a picture of what the manufacturing sector looks like here today. Your organization deals with companies in San Francisco. How many are there? What are they making? How many people do they employ? What's the snapshot look like today?
Sure. So SF Made works focused in San Francisco, although what we see in San Francisco is really being mirrored in cities across the country right now. We've seen since we started about 5 years ago a real resurgence in particularly consumer brands that are designed and increasingly manufactured in the city. We work currently with a little bit more than 600 manufacturers. And in terms of the industry sectors, garments and bags and other things that are cut and sewn represent the largest percentage by numbers of companies of the sector. Food and beverage is the second largest, and that includes brands exactly like Anchor, Ritual Roasters, who makes coffee. And then we have an emerging sector that are still consumer products, but it really runs the gamut of accessories for things like iPads and other technology devices. We're seeing a resurgence in hardware design manufacturing. And really all of this united is this convergence of urbanism and the innovation capacity of a city to have lots of people and creative folks to be able to come together and work in proximity with one another, combining design, making, craft, and a dense urban area where we have a skilled workforce.
So really the whole foodie scene may get a ton of attention, but it's not the largest part of our manufacturing base.
It's a big part, but you know, as much as folks like to joke that San Francisco primarily makes artisan chocolate and coffee, we actually have very robust manufacturers that really run the gamut. And they collectively employ more than 4,000 men and women in San Francisco alone.
And as soon as you said that, I thought one block away is a place that makes coffee, and two blocks away from this building is a place that makes artisanal chocolate. Anyway, let's go around the table. Give people a better sense of exactly what you make and where you make it. Tell us what your main product lines are and where in the Bay Area you physically manufacture them. Fifth Gobadian, let's start with you.
Okay, well, we launched November 2014. We launched with 7 SKUs of T-shirts. And every single bit of our clothing is made right in San Francisco on Mission Street. What was interesting is we started with our manufacturer And they had close to 60 to 70 people working for them. And now, after, you know, about 8 months, there are 25 people working for them. So they're definitely seeing a little bit of shrinkage in business. We also give tote bags with every one of our purchases. And those are made in another manufacturer right in San Francisco as well, on Washburn Street.
Ubi?
We manufacture, the company's Ubi IND. We manufacture jeans. We've just moved all of our sewing here in the Bay Area, downtown area. We're super excited. And yeah, we've been in business for since 99. We're also expanding onto aprons. We're going to get into woven shirts and sort of move slow but gradually.
But you said you moved into downtown. Were you elsewhere in the Bay Area and then came in?
No, we were actually in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And it's a little bit more expensive to do it here, almost actually $9 more, which ends up being about a $43 retail that I will eat. But it just gives me a lot more peace of mind. Also allows me to sort of move a lot quicker.
And Bayard Winthrop?
American Giant started in 2012, and we manufacture sweatshirts entirely in the U.S. Started out making all of our product out of Brisbane, just south of the city, and since then have expanded into now 5 factories in North Carolina, here in the Bay Area, and in L.A. But we reached a point late in 2012 where our capacity outgrew the Brisbane facility, so moved to places that had a little bit more fleece expertise and know-how.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that expansion of capacity, Bayard, as we talk about some of what makes your products so special. Your hoodies have been kind of selling like crazy. There was an article in Slate back in December of 2012, and sales took off. You claimed that you made the world's best hooded sweatshirt. We have one here in studio, and I will put it to my test later. But the writer agreed that this was a very special product. What do you think it was that made these hoodies so awesome?
You know, I think anyone that you talk to, I think, that is in the business of making things will tell you that producing great product is sort of boils down to pretty simple things, great ingredients and great attention to detail. And I think in our case, our business was a sort of a little unique in that we decided to forego all distribution and all marketing and redeploy those savings into the product itself. And that really allowed us to invest in great materials and invest in a lot of needlework and a lot of care on the design side. And so I think it really comes down to that. It comes down to investing in the things that we think really matter, which is good workmanship, good materials, good fit, and then let the product kind of stand on its own.
What was that like seeing your business grow so quickly? How did you adapt to all the demand?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, we had an article. It wasn't just the article in Slate. We actually had a bunch of press that came at the end of that year. And we, in very short order, not only sold out of everything that we had in stock, but we sold out almost all of our capacity in 2013. And so we spent much of the last 2.5 years chasing demand. And I think it speaks to a shift that's happening in the marketplace, really towards more transparency and towards quality and away from some of the sort of nameless, faceless supply chains that we're sort of referencing today.
Why hoodies? Of all garments you could have gotten famous
for. I think
for.
There's two sort of iconic American silhouettes. There's blue jeans, like Ubi is an expert in, and in our case, sweatshirts. I felt they were both pretty classically American. I felt the sweatshirt had been sort of abandoned and that it was really a category that we talk about as having gone to value, meaning it was really a race to the bottom. And I felt there was an opportunity to do something unique and special there.
Fifth Cabadian, your company has a very intentional social mission. You employ women who were formerly behind bars, who were formerly homeless, or who are recovering from substance abuse. How did this become your focus?
You know, it's kind of ironic. I was reading, based on a lot of comments from my friends, the book Orange is the New Black. And everyone's like, oh, this is a great book. I'm reading it and I'm sweating, going, oh my God, this is the most depressing book. I'm looking at these people's lives and thinking, if you take the step in the wrong direction, it takes forever to recover. And the more research I did, the more horrific the numbers were. In the 80s, there were 500,000 women, people incarcerated overall in the United States. Now there are 2.4 million people incarcerated and 7 million on probation.
So from 500,000 in the 80s to 2.5 million now, 5 times increase.
Correct. And 7 million on probation. That's a big number. And the fact is that, you know, a lot of the women who were in the position that have been incarcerated, most of them were there because of drug abuse. And 80% are moms, 67% end up back in the system. So those numbers really affected me. And it was time. I felt like I wanted to do something. And I've always wanted to make T-shirts and clothes so that you can dress them up and dress them down. So I married the two ideas and brought in my partner, who's a designer, and we created Road 22.
Where does the name come from?
Road 22 is the road out of Chowchilla Prison. Originally, I wanted to start the business in the prison because I thought, well, these people would then have some money when they come out. Because when you come out of prison, you're given $200. Your bus fare is taken out of that, and you're dropped in the worst part of the city. So I thought, you know, if I start the jobs in the prison, then they have money when they come out. And what problem with that is that people who get hired to do sewing, such as in Chowchilla, they get 50 cents an hour, and they're usually lifers.
What was it like building your workforce? I imagine you not only had to find the women to hire, but also train them and then deal with them adjusting to a new life.
Actually, that was the hardest part, is finding organizations that trust you to believe that you actually really are not going to abuse this segment of the population. And I've really had great success working with Glide, America Works, and most of the people we've hired have come from those organizations, and Delancey Street as well.
Glide Memorial Church in San Francisco, and Delancey in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I should mention, for those who don't know, Chowchilla is a women's prison in the Central Valley here in California, a female-only prison.
That's right.
Ubi Simpson, your company is different than many others that sell designer jeans. Many of them only do skinny jeans. And you make those, but you also market yours as being accommodating to different body types, including people with athletic builds, people with muscular builds. Personally, I really appreciate that, because that is exactly why I hate buying clothes, because I can't find anything that fits me. But it seems like you've kind of made that one of your reasons, one of your selling points for your jeans. How did that come about?
Well, actually, prior to I should go back. About 6 years ago, I was a partner in another business, which Indie Custom out of the East Bay. And what was an algorithm-based business that asked you about 20 questions, all which were fit-related. What we found was that there was a huge segment of the market that couldn't just purchase a pair of jeans off the rack. Long story short, ran out of funding, company went bust, and I found myself in a position saying, well, I started my actual business in 99 when there was no sort of premium denim, as it's called now. And, you know, going back into a business where you've got, you know, now 3,000 denim brands out there, I decided, you know what, with the information we found, I'm going to take that and actually start building sort of this product.
So you started with data, basically, about
exactly.
How jeans actually fit people.
Correct. And that was really sort of the push to really start again, sort of refocus our business and focus on this athlete. What we also found out data-wise was that, you know, the average American used to be a 32. Now he's a 34. You know, you go to a 36 and you're pretty much at the threshold of premium product. The guy who's a 38, 40, 42, myself, I mean, it's impossible to find. The funny thing is when you go back to our data, we're finding that our number one and number two sizes are a 34 and a 40. So we're not the norm.
But there's a real market for it.
There is a real market. And that's kind of been our success. We're in shops, you know, our retail partners, you know, they're every month they're, you know, they can't believe the consumer that's walking into their store saying, wow, hey, you know, I'm a 38, I'm a 40, you know, do you have anything? And they're like, actually, we do.
Amazingly.
So it's amazing. And it's a premium product. You know, we're made in the U.S. I mean, yes, there are other brands like, you know, the big brands that sort of sell, sell larger sizes. But, you know, with the craft and what we do and how we do and our sort of social mission makes it very different.
We're exploring Bay Area manufacturing with Ulrich Conrad Simpson, Ubi of Ubi in Denim, Fifth Gobadian of Road 22, Bayard Winthrop of American Giant, and Kate Sofus of SF Made. And we'd like to hear from you. What local brands do you support and why? Join the conversation. Call us. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also post your comments online. Go to kqed.org/forum. Kate Sofas, let me come back to you. Byard had mentioned that he has a number of factories, some of which are local, some of which are in North Carolina. California can be a significantly more expensive state to do business in. And I can imagine that there are some people who would think about starting here but not staying here because eventually the cost of scaling would become prohibitive. What are SF Made, and I know you work closely with the city, Mayor Lee has been pushing for more manufacturing. What's available now to try to help these manufacturers start here and stay here?
Yes, you know, indeed, Mayor Lee has really been a very strong vocal proponent of doing whatever we can as a community to retain those who've chosen to start, stay, and grow here. And one of the things that we do in partnership with the mayor's office is an initiative called Fashion SF. One of the things we realized as we started operating in the middle of the recession, when really this and most U.S. cities had lost so much of its manufacturing, was that one of the initial challenges was, frankly, reconnecting what we still had in garment manufacturing with designers. So we had challenges at that time, even finding the factories that were still up and operational. A lot of what we've done since then has been to go out, outreach, inventory, and do a much more proactive job to connect the factories. So, for example, when a designer is looking to start or, frankly, to scale in the city, we spend a good amount of effort helping them not only understand what factories are here, but what their capabilities are. One thing we do every month, and it still amazes us that it's pretty much booked entirely every month, is a how to manufacture locally for garment manufacturing edition. The next one is actually next week on Tuesday night, where designers will come meet with SF Made staff, and we will literally go down one by one all the factories and all their different capabilities. So that's one sort of on-the-ground piece. Other things we do which really affect all of the manufacturing base is proactively helping our companies find space. So finding expansion space, whether you're a contract manufacturer serving a brand or you're an actual manufacturer who combines the brand and the manufacturing in-house, space is probably the number one challenge right now that we're seeing for brands to be successful and scale here in the city.
Especially because real estate here is at a premium like nobody's ever seen.
Indeed. And it really affects not only the ability to find more space in the city for expanding manufacturers, but it also affects the ability for the workforce of the manufacturers to be able to make ends meet. Even though the average SF Made manufacturer already starts people out at $15 and above, so they're often already well above the new planned minimum wage. But even at that level, the cost of housing is really affecting everyone. So you sort of have this dual pressure right now.
Yeah. And Fiff, I was going to ask you how that affects you, especially because you're dealing with a workforce of women who really, really need good day's wage for a good day's work, who are really in need of the benefits and the pay and the opportunity. So I imagine some of that's kind of baked into your business plan because you know what you have to pay.
Right.
But at the same time, there are costs you have to save, and San Francisco's an expensive spot to be. How do you manage that?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, as you said, as Kate just said, it's really difficult to find space. So we really are, we've done kind of like a makeshift situation where we went to a contract manufacturer, and she actually is using her space for our women. So we actually pay her to for the work, for the management, and she can do other business out of that space and use our – we basically are working together.
So you're kind of helping her lower her own costs.
Correct. And for our own office space, we're actually just working out of our homes and storage facilities because it's just impossible to find space to make it work. There's a big attraction to move to LA because of cost savings, but for us – we really want to be on top of every inch, like Ubi just said, and so we are sticking with San Francisco.
Byard, what about you? When you had to decide where to expand, how to expand, was San Francisco or the Bay Area ever a consideration, or did you just know we're going to have to go outside of town?
You know, I think for us it was sort of finding the skilled workers and the skill set first and the factory second. And so There just is there's an incredible domain expertise of fleece manufacturing in the Carolinas. We also get all of our cloth out of the Carolinas. So there was more of a reason, I think, to sort of orient there. But we tried desperately to get scale in our facilities in the Bay Area and just couldn't. So it was a little bit of both. We are, though I totally applaud the San Francisco manufacturing thing, we are sort of more broadly around just American manufacturing. So we didn't enter that problem with a preordained idea to focus on the Bay Area necessarily. But had the capacity and expertise been there, we would have definitely done it.
Ubi, what would you say is the main way you compete with larger clothing companies? I mean, you don't have the benefit of this massive economy of scale, massive networks of department stores selling your goods all over the country. It's a different kind of a business. Where are you finding advantages over bigger companies?
Well, I mean, I think I have a niche. You know, our product is really sort of geared towards, you know, this customer who has a prominent leg, who has maybe possibility of prominent backside, larger quads, you know, the gamut. We, you know, it wasn't so sexy earlier on when we started. And you know, I'm 300 pounds, 6'3". I'm a big guy. So seeing this and also seeing athletes sort of suffering to try to get into this, I said, you know, this is something that I'm passionate about. I love, you know, working in denim. I've worked in denim for over 20 years. No one's really focused on this. So 3 years before a lot of the big brands started looking at, you know, what I was doing, this was sort of our mission statement. So really do this, but do it our way. So, you know, as we start to grow and we start to expand, you know, we have sort of loyal customers, which has been, you know, amazing. I've been able to luck out, get a great space here in town, which is called the Active Space. They do a great job of, you know, facilitating young designers. And within that, I also use a lot of the designers in our building to work with us on our retail space. You know, if I see that someone's like-minded and has a great aesthetic, product first. You know, that's one thing that we've always done. If you look at our garments, the way that I construct our garments, it's like the way that jeans were made. I take a lot of, you know, over the years, you know, places or parts where it would blow out. I really take a lot of care and make into it. So it's important for us to kind of, you know, keep that focus and then, you know, try to save up. I mean, I'm paying more for the goods here in San Francisco, but, you know, it's, you know, every time I go to LA would cost me $2,000 in expense and hotels and
just to get there,
And and I figured, you know what, now, you know, just keeping it here, it's easier to sort of move around.
Well, we are going to talk more about the business considerations behind what you do. We've got some of your products here. I'm going to put the hoodie on and see if I can make it through the rest of the show with this amazing garment on. But we will continue our conversation about Bay Area manufacturing with Ubi Simpson of Ubi in Denim, Fifth Gobadian of Road 22, Bayard Winthrop of American Giant, and Kate Sofus of SF Made. The only thing missing is you. What are the local brands that you support and why? And what would it take for you to spend a few extra dollars on something that is made in the Bay Area? Call us, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Michael Krasny. We're continuing our conversation on Bay Area manufacturing with Ubi Simpson of Ubi in Denim, Fifth Gobadian of Road 22, Bayard Winthrop of American Giant, and Kate Sofus of SF Made. Feel free to call us and join the conversation, 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. By the way, as Kate mentioned, SF Made is holding a workshop next week on manufacturing clothing and other sewn products. It's next Tuesday, the 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. Admission is $30. More details online at sfmade.org. Kate, there's been a big push in this country to promote products that are made in the USA. You know, the federal government has regulated the way that companies make that claim for nearly 20 years, since 1997, basically. What about goods that are made in SF? How much of an impact have you seen that have, if any, in other markets, maybe even overseas, in terms of making people want to buy? Do they really care if it's made in San Francisco?
It's been an interesting trajectory since we started our work, and SF Made, the brand, is both what we use for the nonprofit, but in the very beginning when we started, and even now, many of our companies use the SF Made logo itself as a differentiator. But it's been interesting to sort of see how that has evolved over the last 5 years. When we started, there was a real dearth of U.S. manufacturing generally, whether it was fashion or food or other products. And so we found in this city, people very quickly, as consumer product manufacturers, adopted the SF Made brand as a mark of distinction. And for many of them, it was more attractive as a marketing device than even Made in USA. And I think those SF Made companies that still actively use the SF Made brand in particular are interested in trying to externalize sort of their San Francisco-ness in their brand. A great example, Timbuktu, who's one of our longer-running bag manufacturers, uses the SF Made logo itself on their bags in Japan, because in the Japanese market, something from San Francisco particularly is very exciting. We also have partnerships at SFO at the airport and with the SF Travel, our visitor and convention bureau, to help market SF Made products to visitors to the city.
What about you as entrepreneurs? Have you seen any impact that it's made on potential customers? Do you sell that as a point, as a further reason for them to purchase, or does it really not kind of enter into the equation for you?
I think for our company, Road 22, we see a huge impact on our sales because it is U.S. made. However, when we go to our retail partners and they know that we're made in San Francisco, it definitely helps. For our customer base that buys online, they care about the fact that it's U.S. made. And I think our social mission is a big distinguishing factor, obviously, because we actually are one of the few fashion companies with a social mission that affects the U.S., and it's not environmental. It's actually helping the people in the U.S. who are normally ignored. So,
Ubi, what about you?
I mean, I think, first of all, we're as Made in America. We're, you know, that definitely has a lot of leverage. The San Francisco, I think, like you were saying, depends on the retail. The retailers really sort of get into it, really get jazzed about it. We have a small little store over on 18th and Treat. So, you know, when people walk in, they, you know, they ask a lot of questions. You know, it's the beauty is that the consumer now is engaged, you know, really wants to know. And, you know, when you're able to tell that story, it definitely is a lot more impactful.
And Bayard, you had already said that you were more concerned with the Made in the USA and the kind of American branding rather than San Francisco branding. Why is that?
But I would just build a little bit on what Ubi was saying. And I think one of the interesting things in the marketplace that is shifting is consumers now, particularly younger consumers, are so much more aware of how businesses are making things, what value systems that they are living by, and that's becoming an increasingly important factor in purchasing decisions. And so, you know, I think that the overarching issue in my mind is that consumers are way more informed than they were 20 years ago. They are demanding of information, of clarity, of transparency. And so I think there are clearly consumers that are prioritizing environmental issues or social issues or localization. And I think all those for these emergent brands are really important reasons about how they're attracting new customers. And that's true, I think, for all of us in different versions of that. But I think it's a fundamental shift that is changing the industry right now.
Does that create more pressure for you because you're dealing with a smaller, more concerted band of either fans or opponents who are not shy on Yelp and Twitter and will gladly shout out whether you did right or wrong by them? Does that kind of raise the stakes?
I would say it the opportunity and risk both. I think that when you are a business that is living by a value system and staying true to your core set of principles, your customers become your greatest defenders. Certainly our case, when we were out of stock for a long time trying to chase demand, they were our biggest defenders. It also creates a big risk that if you are caught as not being true to your value system and are being clear about what you're doing, it can be really damaging for your brand.
You know, the other thing that we've seen over the years, and I think for us at SF Made, we see the fact that there's so many more USA-made brands to choose from in the Bay Area and beyond, that in some ways, for some of our companies who actually choose to put forward more just that they're made in USA versus made in San Francisco, that's actually a huge accomplishment for the country that we actually have so many more options than when we got started 5 years ago. But the thing that we see most often in how people think about their branding is whether it's made here or it's made in the Bay or it's made in USA doesn't mean someone's going to buy your product if you are not already the better quality brand, the well-priced brand, the brand they can get a hold of. This misnomer that by just labeling it or saying you're made in the USA or made in San Francisco, that that somehow is going to drive consumer purchase preference has not been our experience. It can be the thing that further amplifies the value proposition once you've already established your customers and your product and your quality and your distribution. So it goes in, it's not instead of, and by itself, it doesn't actually drive consumer purchasing in our experience.
Let's dive in on the phones now, 866-733-6786, beginning with John in San Francisco. John, good morning.
Good morning. Good show. Yeah, I have a company here in San Francisco called Eco Imprints. We're in the Dogpatch neighborhood, and we produce custom merchandise and apparel for corporate clients and boutique retailers and the like. We focus on materials and production that's less detrimental to the environment. And we also do have a focus on local and USA made. And so basically I'm out there talking to a lot of buyers, and the type of buyers that we target are companies or organizations with a strong corporate social responsibility platform. And I could tell you that there is, over the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an increasing interest in products that is local made, and clients are willing to, there are certain clients that are willing to pay for it. More broadly, I think that USA made is something that a lot of clients are looking for. I think the neighborhood that I'm in here in Dogpatch, there's actually a lot of manufacturing going on right here. Some of the buyers, we do print materials, we make bags, we do embroidery, we make awards, we make all kinds of stuff. There are challenges. There's not everything can be made in San Francisco. And I think one of the things, the economy is super strong here. But all this technology emphasis is making it more difficult for small manufacturers. A lot of them have had to leave the area, but now they're coming back, and there's more of an interest in kind of boutique, higher-end, really well-made stuff. The technology culture is strong, but in a way, San Francisco is kind of losing its soul to an extent with artists are having to move out and things like that, and the whole SF Made movement is really helping, I think, bring physical things back that are locally made, and people really appreciate it.
You know, John, that's an interesting point. Thank you for calling in. Fifth, I wonder if you have had a similar experience to John in terms of A, finding people who seek out a kind of conscious socially conscious consumerism, and B, being able to kind of navigate and make that case against this rising tech economy that's squeezing a lot of businesses out.
So I can tell you an interesting story. We've been featured in quite a few magazines and articles, right? And we see definitely an increase in sales. We get two lines literally written about us in The Skim, which is a 4-minute news bite. And now the audience of The Skim are highly educated women primarily who care about social, environmental, and care about what happens in the United States. Our sales went through the roof. I thought my phone was going to explode. So our customer base really cares. And our customer base is very vocal. So for us, that is primarily what we're seeing. People care about our social mission. People are definitely motivated because we're doing things all in the United States. The San Francisco factor adds another level of attraction to our brand because it's more local. You see what I mean? So I think for us, we do attract people because of our social values. It's definitely difficult, like John was just saying, because the tech industry is taking over a lot of space in San Francisco. A lot of money goes towards the tech. It's very hard to find money coming towards consumer goods. If you talk to venture capitalists and you're not wearing a hoodie, sorry, Byron, but your hoodies go very far with the hoodie, with that population. If you're not wearing a hoodie and you're not creating a software program, it's almost impossible.
Jacob wrote us via email. I've lived in the East Bay all 31 of my years and would love to support local merchandise, but I have no idea where to begin to find these items. I'm struggling to stay in the collapsing middle class, but would gladly pay more, knowing I supported my neighbors and our local economy. Byron, I think you wanted to chime in on – were you leaning forward to chime in on what Fifth had said?
Oh, no. I was just agreeing with what she was saying. I think just sort of echoing that, the higher consciousness of consumers, how important that is.
Another listener wrote us, I would buy in SF if there were plus sizes for women. Is anyone doing that?
We are, actually. We got a lot of feedback from our customer base. Originally, when we started, my partner, Alice Cahan, she was telling me, you know, we are a fashion brand and most people – pretty much go up to the large size. We got a barrage of emails. Give us extra large, give us double XL. So we actually have added larger sizes to our brand because of that.
A few of you have been writing in telling us who some of your favorite brands are. Let me run through a few of them quickly. Marna writes via email, my favorite SF-made company is Pladra Shirts. Beautifully made, colorful, unique designs, and comfy for men and women. Love the flannels, especially. Another listener writes, there's a wonderful designer named Giselle Chepatin in San Francisco. Giselle, I hope I'm saying your name kind of correctly. She designs flowing and interesting women's garments. A number of my friends in Berkeley adore her work. It's comfortable and always a joy to feel and look at. Yvonne writes via email, Studio Patro in San Francisco has the loveliest of linen towels, napkins, and aprons, all from SF. Another listener writes, I absolutely love a local clothing company called San Fran Psycho, started by two local surfers out of their van. They're now three stores strong and host a variety of events showcasing local talent, artists, and SF makers. Sybil in Berkeley writes, there's a boy named Ethan at Berkeley High School who's selling a clothing line called Ethos. My ninth grader and all her pals are crazy about this line of clothing, hoodies and t-shirts with his own designs. I'm impressed by the quality of the clothing and by the level of entrepreneurship this guy has demonstrated at such a tender age. Way to go, yes. Ethan, and way to go, Berkeley.
Awesome.
Good for you. Let's continue on the phones now with Frank in San Mateo. Frank, good morning.
Hi, thank you. This is such an interesting conversation. I am a hardcore denim geek. Developed over many years and discovered a wonderful San Francisco brand named Taliesin at a local store in San Francisco called Union Made Goods that sells some local brands, but really has some high-end Japanese denim too. And it's been so interesting to get to know about some local brands, both in San Francisco and Los Angeles too, through the internet. And I've seen some of these brands like Taliesin and some in the LA area, Rogue Territory and Railcar Denim or other local brands that have just mushroomed through other denim geeks through the internet. And I see these brands for sale now on websites that cater to overseas, Asia, Europe. And I just wonder if Uni End and T-shirts that are made in the Bay Area, if they really catch on through the internet. It's such a global marketplace now. How can these companies, these smaller companies, stay in the Bay Area and increase their scale if they really catch on like some of these other brands do? I just can't see them staying in small factories in the city like American Giant hasn't been able to do.
You know, Frank,
I wonder what they have to what they see in the future.
Frank, that's a good question. Since you mentioned denim as our denim geek caller, let me put that to Ubi.
It depends on the factory, really. We work with one of the only factory here in San Francisco, and they can scale. I mean, again, each with the manufacturer depends on who you work with. A lot of the names that you actually mentioned work in the same factory I work in. So they're not going anywhere. Yes, of course, you have to expand and you have to look. The most important part is quality. I think with the brands you're talking about, I mean, they are very particular. They have a certain customer that they feed into and they work with and just supplying them. We work with Cone Mills out of North Carolina that supply our goods. I work with YKK US to supply our buttons and trims. And we also work with Heritage Leather in Los Angeles that supply our leather goods. And, you know, it's really coming together. We can't, of course, make everything in the Bay Area, but it's kind of our starting point. I mean, I kind of like, being also a denim brand, nipping a little at Levi's every now and then for being in their backyard. So watch out.
Let me get to one of the points that is kind of part of the through line of the conversation, but that I don't think we've hit on directly. I can imagine that, and I'm looking at your products here, and they all seem to be extremely well made. I haven't put on the hoodie yet because I have to focus, and we're doing a radio show, so maybe I'll do it after the show. But these all seem extremely well made. Clearly, you understand exactly what makes your products unique, what makes them special, the social values behind them. But they're expensive for someone who is used to shopping at Target and Walmart and Kmart and who just needs a pair of clothes, who's used to just going to Macy's, going to JCPenney when there's a sale, and they're like, I just need jeans. Are these people, maybe people like me, just not your customers? Are you okay letting them go for people who will pay more? or are you hoping to get them somehow? I mean, Ubi, I'm sure your jeans are very well made, but a pair of Levi's 560s do fit me, and they only cost about $40-$50. So, like, am I just not for you? And I'm not picking on you, but am I just not your kind of customer? Or,
well, I mean, I think you have to make a decision. I mean, to manufacture in the United States, we're taking a stand, and you know, it's not going to be cheap. It's the difference between, you know, as a consumer, I will look at American-made company first. But, you know, to be honest, quality is number one. Number two is where it's made. We need to take a bit of pride in our product as manufacturers. You know, you go to Italy. I mean, the Italian that's walking down the street, they've purchased Italian product. You look at the Germans, you look a lot of different countries. We need to make that stand. I can't speak for everyone, but we also have to understand it's not about purchasing 10 jeans. It's buying one really good one, or a shirt, or a car, or, you know, it just consumer, you know, consumer based product. You know, we've got to get out of that mindset, because we're so used to just buying so much and having, you know, stockpiling.
I would add to that, you know, American consumer, the consumer tendency for disposable consumer trends, right, I think is something overall that is needing to shift. And in shorter term, what we're also finding is the distribution models, the assumption that I'm going to make something as a clothing manufacturer, I'm going to make a whole bunch of it to get the price point down, and then I'm going to ship it out to name your big box retailer. And part of the challenge with that model is it encourages large production runs, and actually as part of the challenge of scale, if you don't have to make massive quantities in advance, you actually can keep up with smaller, more nimble factories. But it's the reason why we're seeing more and more, at least of the San Francisco brands, going direct to consumer to keep more margin in the company, and therefore they can actually charge less than if they are selling into a Walmart, a Target, et cetera.
Fifth?
I think you brought up, I want to elaborate on this a little bit. I think it's really important to emphasize two things. One is, for example, for our company, Road 22, we are a fashion brand. We're priced less than a lot of the fashion brands that are out there. Most fashion brands sell a $100 t-shirt, $120 t-shirt. Ours is like in the 70s. The other thing I think is, one thing that Ubi brought up, quality is key. We spend so much time and detail on the type of fabric, on the type of stitching, on the way it drapes, on the way it lays. And that costs. That costs money. So instead of having three t-shirts from Target that you might get rid of in about 2 months, you buy one t-shirt, and we wash our shirts, wash them over and over and over again, and see how they lay, how does it feel? And that is where the duration comes
in. So you buy three that you throw away, or one that'll last.
That's right.
Josh, can I build on that? I want to give, I think you're raising a very interesting point around the viability of U.S. manufacturing. I think, at least in American Giant's case, I think we thought an awful lot about this question about how much of a premium do you want to charge a consumer to pay above and beyond just for a value system. And, you know, our sweatshirt is the one that's in front of you is $89. That's comparable to an Abercrombie sweatshirt in the mall. That was a very intentional place for us to land. And our theory about that is that scale is part of the conversation here, right? That I think that getting to a place where you're employing lots and lots of people and injecting meaningful contribution to the manufacturing sector has to come with scale. And there is something attached there about the mainstream consumer versus the consumer that is at the boutique end of the scale. And so, I think there's lots of things that impact that. But one of them is what you're sort of hearing referencing about rethinking business models and redeploying costs. And I think that what you're seeing now with a lot of the innovation that's coming through with the tech sector and e-commerce and pure play businesses is the liberation of a lot of costs that are allowing you to redeploy dollars into great quality and maintaining retail prices that are more accessible to mainstream consumers.
Instead of flying people to Bentonville, Arkansas to meet with Walmart and get them to stock you.
Or the margins that Walmart require or the marketing budgets that traditional businesses require to stay viable and rethinking the way that you're spending that money.
We're getting plenty of feedback from you about your favorite retailers. I really love it. I hope that you guys will continue commenting on our Facebook page. Keep tweeting out your favorite ones. We're not going to have enough time to get through all of them. A few more that we have gotten. Shamar wanted to shout out Paco Collars. They're in Berkeley. They sell handmade leather dog collars. They were one of my first stops after adopting last week. A bit more expensive than the big box stores, but amazing quality and awesome to see folks, especially younger folks, employed in a small local business. So if you have need for a leather dog collar, insert San Francisco joke here, you can go to Paco Collars in Berkeley. Justin writes, I run Godar Furniture here in San Francisco and build everything in the Bayview. I love it because most of my vendors are within a couple blocks of my studio, and we often just walk over products between our spaces. Customers don't really seem to care about being San Francisco made. In fact, I and others like me sell much more products to New York, Boston, and Los Angeles online using Instagram for promotion. James writes, I own Sunset Shapers in San Francisco's Outer Sunset District. We build surfboards. It is difficult running a labor-intensive business in a city with such high rents, salaries, and living standards. We cannot compete with the salaries offered by tech companies. The rents make it difficult to retain staff as well, but there are some benefits of being an SF, the most prominent of which is the disposable incomes of many of the city's young tech workers. All in all, we love being based in San Francisco and have no plans of leaving. Back to the phones now with Teresa in Santa Rosa. Teresa, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is a great conversation. I've had a lot of these conversations with many people. I have been a Bay Area pattern maker since 1993. And when the economy tanked, I lost a lot of my clients, as a lot of people either went out of business or started manufacturing overseas. And I'm really happy to see that it's starting up again. What I'd love to suggest or see, we used to have an organization in the Bay called San Francisco Fashion Industries, and it cost $1 to be a member. And it was a network of all different aspects of garment manufacturing specifically for the entire Bay Area. I am familiar with SF Made, but I believe it just services people in San Francisco. And a lot of people have called in about, where do I find these products? Where do I find locally made goods? What about if we started another network that included not only the garments that are made in the Bay Area, but also the people that work in the garment industry? Because I know I would like to be a part of that network, and I'm in the North Bay.
Gotcha. Teresa, that's an interesting possibility, and possibly someone listening to this will consider doing that. Teresa, thanks for calling in. Let's go to Gennaro in Oakland. Gennaro, good morning.
Good morning, Joshua. I love hearing you as a host of this program. And I also wanted to say there's this small company, Animal Instinct Apparel. They make lovely clothes for children and adults, men and women. They use really high-quality stuff, and it's run by a local artist who's very talented. And, you know, I heard other callers say, you know, I don't know where to find all this local-made stuff. I would say look at the craft fairs that are all over the Bay Area every weekend. And, I just wanted to say, you know, it's worth the $40 sweatshirt and the $20 T-shirt.
Gotcha.
Animal Instincts.
Excellent. Animal Instincts. Gennaro, thanks for calling in. Let's keep going with Benigucci in San Francisco. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Frank Benigucci.
Benigucci. Gotcha. Good morning.
Hi. I make shoes in San Francisco, and I'm at the point where I'm trying to scale. And I wanted to ask one of your panelists, how was it to train the people from the prison system? Was that difficult, or is it something that can be done?
That would be a question for Fifco Badian.
You know, it's the difficult part. There's two aspects to that. First is there is a little bit of issue with discipline and structure. So you have to kind of work through that. And this is a generalization. Some of my employees have been phenomenal, but some you had to kind of, I had to have a couple conversations with, you know, you really have to come into work at 8:30 and you really have to have only an hour lunch break. So it's just, they're not used to that concept. However, they are the most appreciative, most loyal, most devoted customer employees you can ever imagine. Training them, the way the formula we use, we employ people, look at what they really are good at and train them in that area. So I have one person who's a rock star and she does delivery, customer service, everything pretty much. And then, if you're kind of new to the whole system, just coming to work is a tough concept. Then, I have them just doing like trimming where they take off the extra threads. So it just depends on where their strengths are and I put them where they are best at. And then eventually I just give them more and more responsibilities.
We're almost time for the hour, out of time for the hour, but let me go around the table very, very briefly and just hear from you your 10-second vision for where you'd like to be in the next 5 or 10 years, including SF Made, where you'd like to be as an organization. Fifth, what's your 5-10-year vision, briefly?
National brand all over the United States, emerging towards Europe.
Ubi?
Continue to grow and, keep our product alive.
And Bayard?
I'd like to see us playing a prominent role in reinvigorating manufacturing in the U.S. and just in being a force for good there.
And Kate?
Scale more manufacturers in San Francisco and act as a best practice resource for other cities in the Bay and in the U.S.
It occurs to me that you brought shirts, pants, and a hoodie. You brought an outfit.
Yes.
I wonder if I could. This is enough for me to like. I don't know what size these are.
Well, we can find your size. That's it. I go from 30 to 46.
We'll see if this is my size. I might have to do a costume change in the green room. Ulrich Conrad Simpson, better known as Ubi, the founder of Ubi in Denim. Ubi, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Fifth Gobadian, co-founder and CEO of Road 22. Fifth, glad to have had you on today.
Pleasure.
Bayard Winthrop, the founder of American Giant. Bayard, thank you.
Thanks, Joshua.
And Kate Sofas, the executive director of SF Made. Thanks, Kate.
My pleasure.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Susan Britton, Tina Laubert, and Suki Lewis. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Latoya Tools and Jeremy Siegel. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening, and please keep sharing your favorite Made in SF brands on our Facebook page, tweet us at KQED Forum, or online at kqed.org/forum. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.